from deep inside your radio.
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
Thanks, Katie Couric. Like you, just doing my job. From New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, where it's just a bit toastier than it was in snowy England. And, you know, when they talk, as they do every time that NFL teams want your city to pony up taxpayers' money for a new stadium, they always talk about the economic benefits to the community of having a pro football team there. And those statistics may well be true. I don't know. I'm not a statistician, nor do I play one on TV. But I noticed that they never mention the economic deficit that comes when your team is in the NFC Championship game. And nobody really gets any work done the week preceding because all they're thinking about is the game. I may be just projecting from what's going on here. And I have to say to our listeners on WWNO in New Orleans, this program was recorded earlier today. I don't know how the game is going. But who dat? Just have to say that now. And ladies and gentlemen, we now know what the big idea is in Afghanistan, thanks to Sir Stephen Dalton, head of the Royal Air Force. Here he is with the big idea.
There's clearly a strategy that General McChrystal has laid out with the use of the surge of the American forces that will enable the forces that we have here then to dominate this particular area and particularly to hold the ground where in the past we've been able to clear, but then perhaps because we've had to move on, not necessarily to hold all the ground that we've taken. The big idea here now, over the next period, is to take those areas and then to hold them.
Hold them. Just not take them, but hold them. That's the big idea, ladies and gentlemen. So glad that it was particular thing by Sir Stephen Dalton. What's going on in Pakistan? Our friend, Pakistan? What's happening with A.Q. Khan, the father of the Pakistani bomb, which, you know, was proliferated around the place? He's once again under house arrest. Pakistan has once again curtailed his movements. Pakistan Interior Minister Rehman Malik said after a meeting with senior officials, the government felt Khan's life was in danger. Perhaps from the government. Oh, that's me. Just speculating. His life is under threat and we cannot take risks. Therefore, his movements are being restricted, Malik said. Other senior Pakistani nuclear scientists have also been placed under heightened security following the recent assassinations of foreign scientists, he said. Now, the real security risk, of course, was if he was being kept alive but kidnapped by the... So maybe assassin... Dr. Q. Khan is a former custodian of sensitive information. The security of our nuclear assets and personnel is very important, the Interior Ministry said in the statement. Khan has said the new restrictions convene the High Court's decision to free him following his 2009 release from house arrest. He accused the government of committing contempt of court by doing this. I never gave any media statement which would harm the national security. I never shared any sensitive information with foreign journalists, said Khan. And I believe him because he's only never been questioned by American officials, so he's got to be telling the truth. News now in the neighborhood from Afpak. Afpak. Antonio Maria Costa, the United Nations Drug and Crime Czar's office, or his office of the office of Costa, released a report this week concluding in the past year Afghans paid out $2.5 billion in bribes and kickbacks. That's almost a quarter of the country's gross domestic product. That is gross. The income generated by corruption is exceeded only by the opium trade, $2.8 billion. Drugs and bribes are the two largest income generators in Afghanistan, says Costa, who heads the UN's Office on Drugs and Crime. Well, that's good news for you, buddy. This is another indicator that any U.S. policy on Afghanistan predicated on cooperation with the government is threatened by graft. As it stands, Costa writes, it's almost impossible to obtain a public service in Afghanistan without greasing a palm. Bribing authorities is a way of life. In other words, it's Chicago. Just kidding, Chicago. Just kidding. The average payoff was $159. compared to the average per capita income of $425. 59% of Afghans identified corruption as their biggest concern, worse even than the security situation and widespread unemployment. More about that in a moment, but apropos of AFPAC, we'll be waving goodbye to AFPAC. It's bad news for Gilbert Gottfried, but there it is. The Obama administration has jettisoned the term AFPAC due to Pakistani ire, according to Special Representative for AF and PAC, Richard Holbrooke. We can't use it anymore because it does not please people in Pakistan for understandable reasons, he said. Why? Because Pakistan comes first? PAC-AF? No. Doesn't read. Doesn't ring. Doesn't sing. The reasons weren't all that understandable when Holbrooke coined the term and pushed its usage to governments and reporters alike. The New York Times' Helene Cooper explained that Holbrooke had advocated for the phrase. He takes great pride in having invented the word AFPAC, Helene Cooper of the New York Times said. A few years ago, I was interviewing him for a piece I was working on Afghanistan, and he kept going on, AFPAC, 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 and it was just sort of like white noise, and I kept ignoring it, and I was like, yeah, whatever. I got off the phone, and the next day he called me before my story had run, and he said, your story really needs to use the word AFPAC. And I said, what are you going on about? And he said, no, seriously, AFPAC is going to be big. It got small. AFPAC shrank. No more AFPAC. I don't know. This is like jettisoning the war on terror. What are we going to do? Speaking of Afghanistan, ladies and gentlemen, and corruption, here is BBC's international affairs senior correspondent, John Simpson, on the Afghanistan government's decision to delay the parliamentary elections that were scheduled shortly for 4 months at least.
The delay will allow more time to introduce reforms which are intended to prevent the kind of fraud which was widely alleged against President Karzai's own re-election as president last August.
In other words, let's just play with that for a moment. The Karzai government, elected fraudulently, is delaying the parliamentary elections, and the hope is that that will give more time to prevent fraud in those elections being run by the fraudulently elected Karzai government. You know, and he's a distinguished journalist, but all journalists really should get out of the habit of just taking hopefully accurate notes on what officials say and then repeating it verbatim. I mean, Sarah Palin could do that. Almost. Speaking of whom, you do know that she had trouble when Glenn Beck asked her a week and a half ago to name her favorite founding father. She said all of them. She is now asked to come back on the Glenn Beck show. She's looked through her library and her wallet, and she's come up with the answer. Lincoln. Hello, welcome to the show.
You see, I gotta make it for you, and I
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. Haven't had that for a while. A Michigan defense contractor is going to voluntarily stop stamping references to Bible verses on combat rifle sights made for the U.S. military, which is a major buyer of the company's gear. They were stamping Bible verses on rifle sights. In a statement released this week, Trigicon of Wixom, Michigan, said it will provide free modification kits to the armed forces that allow removal of the scripture citations from the telescoping sites already in use. The Army and Marine Corps have more than 300,000 of the Trigicon sites. Trigicon. The references to Bible passages raised concerns that the citations break a government rule that bars proselytizing by American troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, which are predominantly Muslim countries, don't you know? A spokesman for Central Command said the sites didn't violate the ban, but General Petraeus, Central Command's top officer, called the practice disturbing. Why don't you engrave them on bayonet blades instead, bayonet edges, whatever they are. I don't know. I've never handled a bayonet. Yet, ladies and gentlemen, it's cheap, it's clean, it's safe, it's too wonderful to meter. Officials in Vermont said this week more radioactive tritium had been found at the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant at levels more than 90 times higher than found in a test well nearly 2 weeks ago, when I discussed this last. Yeah, Vermont's hot. William Irwin, the state's radiological health chief, said readings of 1 million to 2 million picocuries per liter of the isotope were found in a concrete trench several hundred feet from the test well where tritium was first reported, way back January 7th. The previous high reading turned up a sample of 22,000 picocuries per liter. The Environmental Protection Safety Standard for tritium in drinking water is 20,000. Again, they found 1 to 2 million. So drink up, Vermont. Plant spokesman said Robert Williams said the announcement that the tritium had turned up in a second testing well was based on a false positive test. But state and Vermont Yankee officials now say they hope the finding of the much higher tritium concentration in the trench means they'd found the source of the contamination. The initial checking indicated pipes running through the trench were not leaking the radioactive water. Another possibility was that water was leaking through the concrete walls of the enclosure. See how safe it is? It was revealed about a week ago that Vermont Yankee, owned by New Orleans-based Entergy, yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about, had misled state officials by saying the plant did not have underground piping of the type that could carry radioactive substances like tritium. That's what I'm talking about. Spokesman on another nuclear story, spokesman for the TVA, Jason Huffney, at the Browns Ferry, Alabama nuclear plant, said that plant officials are working with Nuclear Regulatory Commission in resolving apparent violations in equipment used to automatically shut down the plant's reactors in an emergency. You see how safe it is? How could you possibly? The NRC said in a 61-page report issued after a triennial inspection, the equipment was not properly protected from fire hazards. Well, fires could never happen in a nuclear plant. That's just silly. The spokesman said plant officials are working with the NRC in resolving, quote, apparent violations, unquote, in equipment used to automatically shut down the plant's reactors in an emergency. The NRC found no immediate safety concerns resulting from the violations. Well, what? 2 weeks? A month? A year? What do you got? The NRC also said the plant had flawed procedures that could delay fire response. But again, fire in a nuclear plant, you're dreaming. Finally, residents of eastern Pennsylvania might not know it, but they're living in the middle of a thyroid cancer hotspot, according to a public health advocate. The eastern side of the state lays claim to six of the nation's top 18 counties with the highest thyroid cancer rates, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There is a large number of nuclear plants in the area. We don't know if there's any connection. But we can dream, can't we? It's clean, it's safe, it's cheap, it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap. Just keep repeating that to yourselves while we have news from outside the bubble. more on a report I discussed with you last week. A culture of poverty and resources allocated to training the Afghan police forces created a major problem in Afghanistan, needing urgent and sweeping reforms, according to Lieutenant General Bill Caldwell of the U.S. Army. He's brought in to oversee the training of Afghan forces. He discovered this, remember, said last week, they're illiterate. He also discovered, now revealed by the Independent newspaper in London, that police officers were deemed to have qualified on their entrance courses, quote, if they'd been present on the first day and the last day of the course, it had not mattered whether they had passed the tests in the course. Well, they're not teaching to the test, we know that. The police training process has been one of the glaring failures in setting up a new enforcement system. The task was initially given to Germans, but their program was a version of the German police training system unsuitable for local conditions, and it was abandoned as a failure. The legacy of successive failures is a police force poorly equipped and paid, with many members steeped in corruption, using their uniforms and guns for extortion of the local population. Many dealt in drugs or were addicts. There's a rising number of police officers taking part in attacks against Western troops and officials, raising worries about just how much the Taliban has infiltrated the ranks. Now they couldn't do that. That happened in Iraq. Now, says NATO, a new training scheme backed by 20 countries with trainers drawn from troop reinforcements have been sent, rectifying the mistakes of the past. We've changed things around, says Lieutenant General Caldwell. Instead of just joining up, now they're trained before they're employed. We know there's a high level of illiteracy, so instead we have more trainers and we're more thorough in training them. At the Iraq Inquiry this week, the claim that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction which could be used within 45 minutes in the notorious British government dossier in September of 2002 was asking for trouble, according to Tony Blair's former security coordinator, Sir David Almond. He said some intelligence figures were queasy about publishing intelligence details. The government was warned in advance that action in Iraq could draw large numbers to Islamic extremism. In the nobody was warned department, somebody was warned. The 45 minutes claim was at the center of a row between the BBC and the government. Sir David said it was a piece of intelligence that was circulated quite late in the day. But it was good. He also said the Joint Intelligence Committee had not stepped back in January 2003 to reassess intelligence on Iraq's weapons when the UN inspectors had not found any. When the inspectors started to report they weren't finding what we thought was going to be found, the response in the Secret Intelligence Service was simply to turn up the volume control to say this just proves how devious Saddam Hussein is and how incompetent the inspectors are. Unquote. He also said, quote, there was a clear difference within Washington between the CIA and its own analysts and those inside the Pentagon, unquote. Of course, here in this country, we've been taught to blame the CIA. He said there was, quote, this psychological state of being unwilling to admit that actually it wasn't going to turn out the way that had been predicted. Tony Blair will be testifying to that inquiry this week. Almond said there had been warnings that invading Iraq would increase the probability of British interests becoming a higher priority target for international terrorists. Apropos, the British government has just upped the threat level this week. On December 13th, 2002, we warned that U.S.-led action could draw large numbers to the Islamist extremism ideology over the following 5 years, he said. More from BBC. The British government has announced a ban on the export to Iraq and Afghanistan of some so-called bomb detectors. It follows an investigation by the BBC's Newsnight program, which found that one type of detector made by a British company cannot work. That's why the British bomb detector industry is in such trouble, I guess. The Iraqi government has spent $85 million on the ADE-651. Oh, no, that's the one I carry. And there are concerns that they have failed to stop bomb attacks that have killed hundreds of people. The ban on the ADE-651 and similar devices starts this coming week. The British government has now also arrested the head of the company. Sidney Alford, a leading explosive expert who advises all branches of the military, says the sale of the ADE-651 was absolutely immoral. It's a glorified dousing rod. Iraq has bought thousands of the detectors. The device is sold by Jim McCormick. The detector has never been shown to work in a scientific test. There are no batteries. It consists of a swiveling aerial mounted to a hinge on a hand grip. Critics have likened it to a glorified dousing rod. McCormick told the BBC in an interview, the theory behind dousing and the theory behind how we actually detect explosives is very similar. He says the key to it is the black box connected to the aerial into which you put programmed substance detection cards, each designed to tune into the frequency of a particular explosive. The training manual for the device says it can even, with the right card, detect elephants, humans, and $100 bills. But BBC obtained a set of the cards and took them to Cambridge University's computer lab. Dr. Marcus Kuhn said it was impossible that the card could detect anything at all. It had nothing but the type of anti-theft tag used to prevent stealing in stores. The card had absolutely nothing to do with the detection of explosives. There is nothing to program in these cards. There is no memory. There is no microcontroller. There is no way any form of information can be shared. And more. More than 40 sites across Iraq are contaminated with high levels of radiation and dioxins, with 3 decades of war and neglect having left environmental ruin in large part of the country, an official Iraqi study has found. Say you're welcome, Iraq. Areas in and near Iraq's largest towns and cities, including Najaf, Basra, and, say it with me, Fallujah, account for about 25% of the contaminated sites, which appear to coincide with communities that have seen increased rates of cancer and birth defects over the past 5 years. That, my friends, is a coincidence. The joint study by the Environment, Health, and Science Ministries found that scrap metal yards in and around Baghdad and Basra contain high levels of ionizing radiation, thought to be a legacy of depleted uranium used in munitions during the first Gulf War and since the 2003 invasion. Say you're welcome. Finally, 8 organizations, governments, and the UN have been accused of failing Haiti by competing for publicity instead of getting on with the job of disaster relief. You may have been wondering about this. Now The Lancet, the British Weekly Medical Journal, accuses the bodies of putting self-interest, a scramble for photo ops, and rivalry before the organization of the relief effort. Some agencies even claim they are spearheading the relief effort. In fact, as we only too clearly see, the situation in Haiti is chaotic, devastating, and anything but coordinated, says the journal. It did not name offenders, but called for more scrutiny of the aid sector. Large aid agencies can be obsessed with raising money through their own appeal efforts, Red Cross media coverage, as an end to itself, is too often an aim of their activities. Marketing and branding have too high a profile, unquote, the British Medical Journal, The Lancet. The Lancet can cut, apparently, ladies and gentlemen. News from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
De bom que você me fizer, faz-me te vejo não saio do tom, mas meu desejo já se repara. Me dá um beijo com tudo de bom e acende a noite na Guanabara. Meu amor, você me dá sorte. Meu amor, você me dá sorte. Meu amor, você me dá sorte.
This is Le Show from New Orleans, and now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
From the uh-oh department, the Indian head of the UN Climate Change International Panel, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, defended his position this week, even as further errors were identified in the panel's assessment of Himalayan glaciers. Dr. Rajendra Pachauri dismissed calls for him to resign over the IPCC's retraction of its prediction a couple years ago that Himalayan glaciers could disappear by 2035. He admits there may have been other errors in the same section of the report and said he was considering whether to take action against those responsible. No, do like the U.S. government. Look ahead. Don't look back. I know a lot of climate skeptics are after my blood, but I'm in no mood to oblige them, he told the British newspaper, The Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, in an interview. It was a collective failure by a number of people, he said. I need to consider what action to take, but that will take several weeks. It's best to think with a cool head, he said, the head of the agency that's dealing with global warming, you see, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I chuckled at that. It will take a cool head rather than shoot from the hip. All right, two cliches in the same sentence, sir. I salute you. The 2007 report, which won the Nobel Peace Prize, said the probability of Himalayan glaciers disappearing by the year 2035, and perhaps sooner, is very high. But it emerged last week that the forecast was based not on a consensus among climate change experts, but on a media interview with a single Indian glaciologist in 1999. The IPCC admitted this week the prediction was poorly substantiated in the latest of a series of blows to the panel's credibility. says The Times. The IPCC's report was the responsibility of the panel's co-chairs at the time, both of whom have since moved on. That's all we really want to do, isn't it? When things get tough, just move on. Can't we just all move on? They were Dr. Martin Perry, British scientist now at Imperial College London. He's moved on. And Dr. Osvaldo Canziani, an Argentine meteorologist. He's moved on to not be available for comment. As that's the same place Dr. Perry has moved to. I don't want to blame them, but typically the working group reports are managed by the co-chairs, Dr. Pachauri said, pointing fingers. Of course, the chair is there to facilitate things, he said, as the chair, but we have substantial amounts of delegation. He declined to blame the 25 authors and editors of the erroneous part of the report, who included a Filipino, a Mongolian, a Malaysian, an Indonesian, an Iranian, an Australian, and two Vietnamese. Talk about your melting pot. The Indian glaciologist erroneously quoted as making the 2035 prediction, Syed Hasnain, said responsibility had to lie with the authors. It is the lead authors. Blame goes to them, he says. There are many mistakes in it. It is a very poorly made report. He and other leading glaciologists pointed out at least five glaring errors in the relevant section. It says the total area of Himalayan glaciers will likely shrink from the present 500,000 to 100,000 square kilometers by 2035. There are now only 33,000 square kilometers of glaciers in that range. A table says that between 1845 and 1965, the Pindari Glacier shrank by 2,800 meters, a rate of 135 a year. The actual rate is only 23 a year. The section says Himalayan glaciers are receding faster than in any other part of the world, while many glaciologists say they're melting at about the same rate. An entire paragraph is also attributed to the World Wildlife Fund when only one sentence came from it, and the IPCC is not supposed to use advocacy groups as sources. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen. Keep a cooler head when you're reading News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, the world of change makes itself known to us at this particular point in time. A year on, a year after we inaugurated the era of change, comes this report from McClatchy Newspapers. Although the FBI has acknowledged it improperly obtained thousands of Americans' phone records for years, the Obama administration continues to assert that the Bureau can obtain them without any formal legal process or court oversight. The FBI revealed the stance in a newly released report, troubling critics who'd hoped the Bureau had been chastened enough by its own abuses to drop that position. The Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, hey, let's get John Yoo back. Backed the FBI in a written opinion issued this month. The OLC opinion, that's the same organization that wrote the torture memos, appears to be yet another sign that the Obama administration can be just as assertive as the Bush administration in claiming sweeping and controversial anti-terrorism powers. The Justice Department's Inspector General says the new OLC opinion has significant policy implications that need to be considered by the FBI, the Justice Department, and the Congress. The FBI says this kind of activities in the past, said Michael German, a former FBI agent who's now with the ACLU, but if they're saying that they have a continuing legal authority, that means it's not in the past. Also, another similarity to Bush-era decisions to keep legal theories under wraps, Obama's Justice Department refused to release to McClatchy the OLC opinion, despite the administration's vow to be more open than its predecessors. The little-noticed revelation about the OLC opinion and the FBI's position appears in a heavily redacted section of an Inspector General's report released this week. In it, Inspector General Glenn Fine concluded the FBI committed egregious violations of the law when it obtained thousands of telephone records without court oversight or through any formal legal process. A casual environment exists in which FBI agents and employees of telephone companies treated Americans' telephone records so cavalierly that one senior FBI counterterrorism official said getting access to them was as easy as having an ATM in your living room. I don't know if your wife would go for that, sir. Mine would want it to be a nice-looking ATM with no wires. And in the wake of the Massachusetts Senate special election in which the Democrats lost the seat, Republican won it, and there's been much hand-wringing on the part of Democrats in Washington, President Obama delivered a speech in Ohio taking a newly aggressive populist tone, telling Americans he ran for president to confront challenges, quote, once and for all, end quote. By the way, the four most dangerous words in the political lexicon, because nothing is once and for all. You know that. Obama used the word fighting 13 times in his speech, and the word fight an additional 9 times. So that would be, you do the math. Fight and fighting in that speech. One might well ask, what's next?
Okay, Mr. President, you've had a chance to go over it.
Over what, Rom? I'm the president. I go over everything.
You do indeed, sir. I met a chance to go over the remarks for the Monday appearance. It's your first chance to be on television since the weekend.
I think they printed it out for me. Yeah, got it.
You want to just give it a scan in light of what we were talking about earlier, the whole toughness meme?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Light it be returning to the backbone of the nation, Poughkeepsie. Mm-hmm. We're calling it the backbone of the nation because...
Just getting the word backbone in as close to the top.
Got it. Glad to see Congressman blah, 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 blah. Healthcare reform. As they said in Spinal Tap, we're turning our efforts to pass the bill up to 11. Rock reference?
Spine.
Right. Mm-hmm. With 41 votes, the ball's in the Republicans' court. Some say we'd be nuts to think they'll stop their obstructionist tactics. I'll just read along here.
No good. I can, you know.
But Maria Gutierrez of El Cajon, California, who lost her health insurance when she lost her job, wants us to continue, and so do all the other Maria Gutierrez's and all the other El Cajones across America. Kind of a long way around to get cojones in there.
It's on message.
Some obstacles still remain in our path. Some balls will still take some odd bounces. Nice return to balls. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some details of our bill will surely change, but the guts of the legislation will remain in the negotiations to come, the nuts and blocks.
Yeah, it should be bolts.
Right. Details may sometimes be confusing, but the spine of this story is straight and true. At this point, we have rocks to climb, not a mountain. Wow. John took a rocks reference and went Dr. King on it.
Kid's good.
We read in the old testicle that...
You're supposed to do that like a Freudian slip, you know, testament.
No, I don't do shticks. Mm-hmm. I'll take this whole Bible thing out. Republicans have lost their marbles if they think blah, blah, blah. They'll leave no stones unturned. Mm-hmm. Testimonials from AARP and AMA.
You just kind of cheat the testy a little. Testimonial.
Cheat the testy. I'll do a sticky on it. Mm-hmm. Just as the spine of a book doesn't tell you what's inside, that's reaching.
Man's reach should exceed
what the media are saying after Massachusetts doesn't tell you what's going to happen with health care. That's a good pivot.
Yeah, the reach pays off.
We will back the whole bill. We will back bare bones version. But we will not back down. Wow. I could have written that.
I'm saying, you tell him just get balls and backbone in there as much as possible. He turns it into goddamn rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
Too much.
Not enough.
Okay, more on the prompter in the morning. Mm. Have a good night.
I'll try.
Thank you for giving me the time to learn. I want to thank you for letting me burn all those bridges. Let me thank you for knowing that it wouldn't be my day. Cause you may lose your mind and you may lose your way, but this is the pursuit of happiness. And Mother, mercy, hear your daughter. I'm a baby in a bulbush. I'm a ship out of water. Don't you know that I've gone denying? I'm crying for some laughter. So, Southern, be mother.
So, ladies and gentlemen, in media news, Conan O'Brien is no longer allowed to make fun of NBC now that he's taken, I don't know, $40 million of their dollars. I don't know. I'd rather want to make fun of NBC, me personally. I don't know. No, I've made a similar deal. Conan, just one word of advice. Make sure NBC can't badmouth you, too. Make sure it's a reciprocal. I'm sure your people have taken care of it, but, you know. Sometimes those deals aren't reciprocal like that. I speak from experience. In other media news, the Air America Radio Network, so-called progressive or liberal talk radio network, announced suddenly this week it was going into bankruptcy. It's done that before, but this time it's bad bankruptcy, i.e. it's going off the air. They'd been in Chapter 11 before, which allowed you to... That's the good bankruptcy. Now it's curtains. It's curtains, drapes, and carpet for Air America after, I guess, 4 or 5 years on the air. Never could quite reach critical mass in terms of advertising and affiliates and audience. Oh, yeah, audience. That thing, that little thing. And it put me in mind of how I thought liberal talk radio would sound from the vantage point of a year or so before Air America went back on the air. Might be fun to revisit that now, don't you think?
Al Gore! From the massively impressive Fairness in Media building here in the heart of booming Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Al Gore. Welcome to the Gore Room. Lots of requests for our What's the Rush bumper stickers. They're going to go out there, I believe, this weekend. Yeah,
I still prefer Crush Rush.
Now, Al Franken, we don't want to crush him. We just want to crush his ideas.
I want to crush him.
Okay. Coming up this hour on the phone from the campaign trail, my former running mate is one of the bright, bright prospects for 2004, Joe Lieberman. Did you see this, Al? President Bush.
You mean President Idiot?
Hey, be respectful, Al. He's
the man who stole the presidency.
Ha ha ha, down boy. We may have to put you in the lockbox.
Oh, no.
Anywho, President Bush declared last Thursday Reverence for Life Day. Of course, that's code for we're going to try like hell to get you born, and then you're on your own. I did that right, didn't I?
Yeah, pretty good.
Al's been giving me pointers on timing.
Yes, and he's giving me timers on pointing.
What does that mean?
It means we're on radio. We got 2 hours to fill.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So today, let's see who we're putting in Al's lockbox. That should be whom. Let's try to change that card, okay, Corinna? Got the whole family in the control room today. Uh-huh. There's a tipper in there somewhere. She chooses all our bumper music, of course, making sure that there aren't any lyrical lapses.
But they're just instrumental vamps, aren't they?
Yes, but when you hear the vamp, there's an associative reaction, you know. Your brain starts playing the rest of the tune in your head, and you hear those lyrics. So I think she's on the right track there, and no, that is not junk science. Anyway, the lockbox today...
Yeah, this is good.
Today we're putting in the banana industry. Did you see this? For narrowing down the genetic structure of the banana so... narrowly, I guess the word would be, that the spread of a single fungal disease threatens to wipe out the entire fruit.
Of the whole banana thing.
I feel like I'm talking to Ed McMahon here. Yes, 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 we would have no bananas, as the old song never did have it.
No.
So for an industry that so short-sightedly endangers the world's supply of dietary potassium, into the lockbox. Those are fun. I like those. And that's true about the bananas.
Yeah, we check this stuff out. Mm-hmm. Unlike some other people you hear on the radio.
Of course, I started out as a newspaper man. That's what we were trained to do. Check out the facts. You know, that's why if you think the media is liberal, you know, that may be why. Because they check the facts and they know that we're right. Now, that's weird in a way, because I'll tell you something else. When you run for president, you find out all the media around the country that don't necessarily bother to check the facts.
Hey, hey, Senator Lieberman's on the line right now. Hello, Senator.
Hello. Who am I speaking to? Is this Al Franken or Al Gore? You have a company of Al's there.
Senator, this is Al Gore. Senator, I'm going to call you Mr. Vice President. Welcome to the Gore Room.
Oh, it's great to be a part of something that's been necessary for so long. A sane, rational, but yet entertaining outlet for what I like to call the principled opposition.
Oh, absolutely. And let's get right into it, because we've only got a couple hours. The war in Iraq.
Yes.
Now, does the liberal movement think it's inevitable, and does the liberal movement think it's necessary?
You know, I don't feel as though I speak so much as a part of a movement, more as the spearhead of a campaign, maybe even a mission to bring something back to this country that we've been sorely missing.
Yeah.
By the way, Hadassah and I are so proud that the tipper is in there making this program at least one place on the airwaves where you can take your children when they're old enough.
Well, you know, when the conservatives just crank out the same talking points all day long, I think liberal people and open-minded folks out there just really want to know whether this war might not be a mistake.
Well, Al, you and I may not seem eye to eye on this, mm-hmm. but I voted for the resolution in the Senate. I'd do it again, and I pray that I don't have to do it again.
Okay, let's talk about this move the alleged president is making to put a cap on pain and suffering rewards in medical malpractice cases.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get this straight, Joe, the price is about to go down for committing a possibly disastrous medical mal-something.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't that mean more screw-ups by our admittedly overworked physicians?
Well, Al, the insurance industry was getting socked with these ridiculous $1 billion, $2 billion damage verdicts by these runaway juries who like to see themselves on the news.
Mm-hmm.
They did the only thing they could do in the situation, raise the cost of malpractice insurance for everybody. I think the administration is on the right track here.
Well, they're not on the left track, that's for sure.
What do you think, Joe? Should I put Al in the lockbox?
Oh, don't get me started.
But if I could ask the senator a serious question here, Al.
Sure, go ahead.
Senator Lieberman, mm-hmm. it's so hard, as Al said, to avoid getting drowned out by all the voices from the right.
Yeah.
But when you hear Pat Robertson and these guys talking about a culture war, it's like... Isn't that just a bad joke? I mean, Pat Robertson's idea of culture is the Museum of Clown Paintings.
Yeah. Yeah, where is that now?
No, I mean, sure.
Keep telling you, Al, don't kid a kidder.
You know, Hadassah and I have been blessed with enough children to form their own klezmer band, and as parents, we're on the front lines of that war every day,
mm-hmm.
and our only weapons are the remote control and... In a pinch, the master fuse box for the whole house. So we feel the way I think millions of parents across this country feel, that we wouldn't mind getting a little help from the government and from Hollywood with that particular struggle.
You know, I wish everybody listening could see those kids. They are such beautiful kids.
Well, maybe if we got a TV show.
Hey, listen, I don't think I'm prejudiced or anything, but I think the Gore Room would be just as good on TV as on radio.
Oh, absolutely.
Little thing we do here every day, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
As you probably know, here's today's Hero of Free Enterprise. Donald William Crandell, Chief Financial Officer of Tensity, the company whose stock has plummeted by about 80% in the last couple years, he gives himself a $20 million bonus and then lays off 500 employees.
I know, Don. He's a good guy. A terrible golfer, but a good guy.
Joe Lieberman, mm-hmm. I wish we had the whole 2 hours with you today, but I thank you for coming on and showing folks that there's a common sense side to the liberal worldview.
Well, thank you, Al. The show sounds great. I can't wait to listen to it again. Oh. Thank you for having me.
Well, we are going to talk to all the Democratic presidential candidates. That's only on the Fairness in Media Network.
I think we should put Joe in the lockbox.
Alan is more liberal than thou attitude. I love it. We'll be right back.
Yeah, what could have ever explained why that wasn't on the air anymore? Ladies and gentlemen, quickly, the apologies of the week. USC women's basketball coach Michael Cooper apologized to UCLA coach Mickey Caldwell for an expletive he used in his post-game news conference last week. His opening statement was, bleep UCLA. They're not saying boo, they're saying coop. No, they're saying boo. Fired Miami police officer Wayne Fortella only wanted to help two friends down on their luck when he schemed with them to steal $14,000 from Crime Stoppers, which doles out cash to tipsters. He apologized in federal court for exploiting Crime Stoppers. Vancouver police publicly apologized to a 44-year-old man who was roughed up and arrested in a case of mistaken identity. Right house, wrong apartment. An Italian television channel has apologized for a prank in which a female presenter attempted to grab David Beckham between the legs. Woo! Fast food giant McDonald's in Singapore apologized to Singaporeans and said it would bring a pig to its latest toy collection after the decision to leave the animal out stirred a controversy in the Chinese-dominated city-state. Fast food chain left out the pig, arguing the company did not want to offend Muslims, but the decision raised protests among Chinese. Said it wouldn't make sense to collect the toys without the pig. Muslims, writing in internet forums, were relaxed about the whole thing, said, it's just a toy.
Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Oh, and Keith Olbermann apologized for his comments about the Senator-elect Scott Brown Friday night. I have been a little over the top late, he said. Point taken. Sorry. Now, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at audible.com/theshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like liberal talk radio coming back in a listenable form, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Hey, any form of listenable radio would be a nice idea right about now. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Honolulu desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM in New Orleans, where I'm hoping the news is good. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist, I don't mean at WWNO, I mean in New Orleans. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on, always available at harryshearer.com. And Le Show is on Twitter, at LeTwits. By the way, if you're in New Orleans, the Silent Echo Chamber has opened at the CAC. Come see my show. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.